Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello, Tater, doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. It's lovely up here in the city. Beautiful, beautiful spring weather.
Yeah.
Great rooftop drinking weather. I think that's the season we're in, rooftop drinking.
Yeah. Well, we got our first day in the pool in today. Had 80-degree weather, so I got the pool in shape, so we decided to go swimming. The granddaughters came down, and a good time was had by all.
Amazing.
Pretty early, huh? Or April 19th. Tomorrow's
19th.
Tomorrow's 4/20, which is Blaze It Day.
That is Blaze It Day. You were correct. Are you going to celebrate Blaze It Day, Dad?
I have to work for a living.
Yeah, you're the boss, though. You're the one that would do the drug testing, so, you know, you get away with it.
Oh, you know, you can't do that. You got to set the example.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I just noticed, CBD sodas and beverages have been popular, in my local bodegas for a while now, but I know that there's some, I don't really know the full ruling. I know, legally you can have and sell THC containing products in New York right now, but I don't think anybody's getting licenses to, but a lot of these businesses have just been doing it anyway. And just as of today, my local bodega, it's very, very, very subtle, but amidst all of their fancy sodas and whatever, they've got one little THC soda there.
Hmm.
Yeah. So,
I haven't seen any of those around here. Although I did get lucky and find a Maro Nonino in my liquor store that I've never seen there before, and suddenly it was there. So
is it because of you? Was it you that did it?
I did go up and ask for it not that long ago, and they said, no, we don't carry that. And then suddenly I'm over getting Aperol, and I look up, and there's Nonino. And I'm like, how did they get that in here? Why? But I grabbed it. I went ahead and grabbed a bottle. Even though I had a bottle ordered, I went ahead and grabbed one that was there.
Go through it. I'm calling it now, and I've said it before, but I think that the paper plane is going to be a thing this summer. I think that's going to be a drink. I think there's a reason those bottles are popping up in your liquor store. I think
it could be
popping up at a liquor store in West Virginia. I think we should all know how to make paper planes in the industry this summer.
Yeah, yeah. When I was making friends with my bartender buddy up on that rooftop bar, I was trying to convince him, hey, you need to get a paper plane on the menu. That's a good springtime drink. Everybody will like that. He said, yeah, but I don't think that my boss would let me buy Nonino.
Yeah, it's an expensive bottle. It's worth it, but it's expensive.
Yeah, I'm going to do a head-to-head taste test with the Amaro we were using and then the Nonino that we just got.
What Amaro were you using?
I'd have to look at the bottle. It's a kind of a red and white label. And the color of the Amaro is a little darker. So when you mix up your drink, it's more of a brown than an orange. And that real pretty orange that you get with the Nonino is such a, pleasing to the eye when you get that. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you pour a brown drink, it's not as pleasing to look at.
That's true.
So that's kind of the difference visually. Now, taste-wise, I'm not sure. It was still good. I still liked it, even though it wasn't Nonino. But I don't know if I liked it as well, but I'm going to do a direct head-to-head this weekend and see which way it goes.
All right, well, we'll look forward to you reporting back.
All right, I will.
Did you have any other fun drinks this week?
I just loaded up on the rum chata and iced coffee and Kahlua drink. Man, I love that drink. I was making doubles of that. It's like drinking milkshakes.
That sounds
those things
like,
are just that, plain
yeah,
good.
That sounds like
so
milkshake.
I drank up all the rum chata. I drank up all of ours and all of Sydney and Justin. So I went and bought two bottles
bright
of that.
Springy flavors there.
Yeah, yeah, rum and Kahlua. That's bright, springy flavors.
Yeah,
and coffee. Yeah,
you should try. You should try. I know Justin makes that cinnamon toast crunch drink, but just cut out the middleman and just have your bowl of cinnamon toast crunch with rum chata in it.
Yeah, that'd be about right.
I've eaten Lucky Charms with Bailey's as the milk before.
Yeah, well, Bailey's is good stuff.
but we're not talking about incredibly heavy, boozy milkshake today. We're talking about basically the complete opposite of that.
Oh, darn.
You know, it is spring has more or less arrived here in New York City, and you know, most people when they think like a spring drink, specifically like a spring wine, they think rosé, right? That's now is the season mm-hmm. for rosé. Right. We talked about rosé first. And second, that's not my spring wine. My spring wine is something called Vino Verde, which the only thing I really knew about it was that I liked it, so I thought we could do an episode on it so I could learn more.
All right. Vino Verde. I never heard of it, but, you know, it sounds good.
I know you're not the biggest wine fan, but you know, you can.
Yeah, I'm not a wine fan, but I like learning about these things. And
I think Mom would like Vino Verde. Maybe you can learn, and then you can buy some for Mom.
Yeah,
surprise her, because I think she'd like it.
I'll be able to find it and tell her what's involved with it.
So I was first introduced to Vino Verde years ago. I was at a wine tasting for a restaurant I worked at, and I just kind of like, you know, you get like your short list, you file it away of what it is, and I was like, it's from Portugal, it's white. It's a little bubbly, it's very acidic, it's very refreshing, and it's very cheap. And that was kind of it. And it's just like, you know, my local liquor store, they sell a single bottle of Vino Verde, but it's $9, it's delicious, and I get it, like, once it gets above 55 degrees, I get it, like, once a week. But it's actually, Vino Verde can be a lot more than that. So let's get into it.
All right, let's do it.
So first, let's start with the name. Vino Verde translates to...
green wine.
There you go. But it's not green as in green. It's green as in young.
Green as in young. It's a rookie.
Yeah. It's a little sweet baby wine.
And I think that the main reason they call it young is originally when they would bottle it, it wasn't even completely done fermenting yet. And they would bottle it and it would continue to... finish up the fermenting process, and it added a carbonation to the wine.
Well, and that's one of those which we'll get into some of the other characteristics, but that's one of those that's like, for what the kind of Vino Verde that gets exported, that's one of the characteristics that we associate with it, but it's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the name also comes slightly from the region it's grown in. So specifically, you know, when we talk wine, sometimes, as we've learned, the name comes from the type of grapes, such as like Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. Pinot Noir is the Pinot Noir grape.
Mm-hmm.
It can be grown anywhere, and it's made from that grape, and it's called Pinot Noir. Now, then other wines, they get their name from the region they're grown in, like Champagne. Champagne, there's a lot of grapes that you could make Champagne from, but it will be called Champagne only if it's made in the Champagne region. So in the case of Vino Verde, it is that region-specific thing. It's specifically a DOC or like a denomination, like origin of control, which just means that the wine has to come from a certain region, and there are probably some certain regulations it has to follow to get the name Vino Verde. So you could even like, Vino Verde is even like a, like even outside of the wine, it's kind of a region that people can, like travel-wise, you can travel to the Vino Verde region, just as you can travel to the Champagne region of France.
It's just like what Kentucky did with bourbon.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the original area that Vino Verde came from was the Minho province of Portugal. And then there's some sort of just like up like the northern sort of to the west in Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
Butts up against Spain. But there's a few other little southern regions that are tacked on. But you basically get these 9 sub-regions of production. And that is where you can make Vino Verde. And nowhere else in the world.
If you don't come from there, you got to call it something else.
Yep. Now, I was under the idea that Vino Verde is always white wine, but that is actually false. Style-wise, while white Vino Verde takes up about 86% of all Vino Verde made, it does not have to be white. The cooler climate of northern Portugal is much harder to mature red grapes in, but there are a few specific varietals that are used that are red, and even rosé. So you can get some, and even sparkling. So you can get red Vino Verdes, you can get rosé Vino Verdes, sparkling Vino Verdes. Sometimes they've even distilled it into brandy. The red wines usually are like very fruity, a little bit of like notes of pepper and florals. The rosé wines, which are also not very common, they're a little bit more like red berry flavors. So really interesting. You just don't see a lot of those exported, because the style that gets exported is sort of what we have in our mind is Vino Verde. Mm-hmm. Cheap, bubbly, sparkly.
Yeah, and I think they do, the majority of it is consumed domestically there. Hmm. They don't do as much exporting as they do self-imbibing.
Absolutely.
If you got a good product, why give it to everybody else? Just keep it for yourself.
I understand it. Well, it was like you read like the rosé and the red ones are apparently delicious, and they don't export many of them because it is harder to make. So they keep the good stuff at home.
Well, it's rare, so I would guess it's kind of expensive. Yeah. Because they don't, like you said, they don't get that much red grape production because of the climate being cold and rainy. They don't get to mature.
But, I mean, even across the board, all of these wines largely have the same. They do have that young aspect in common. And by that specifically, that means they're released like 3 to 6 months after the harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually meant to be consumed. This is not a wine you stick on your shelf and age. You should consume it very soon after bottling. So it's a very tight production and distribution and drinking period. As far as like, you know, where its history is, Vino Verde has been around for a long while. It's referenced as far back as the ancient Romans, not by name, but specifically the types of wines that were grown in this area. Having a family plot of land to grow wine grapes in has been like a common aspect of Portuguese life for centuries. And professional wineries in these regions date back to at least 870 AD. They're usually built by religious orders as like tax write-off purposes. Well, they were making Vino Verde.
And one of Sydney's favorite people was mentioned in reference to it, Pliny the Elder.
That's true. Yep. He talked about the wines of this region.
Yeah. And
probably attributing some medical power to them.
His sidekick, Seneca the Younger.
Pliny the Elder and Seneca the Younger, yeah. Is that what they were called?
Yeah, that's what it has. I don't,
they were both a fan of these.
It was like that was a former Batman and Robin, Pliny the Elder and Seneca the Younger. Shazam, Shazam, Pliny.
as you mentioned, it was largely still is, and especially when it was started in production, Vino Verde was a largely domestic product. People drank it at home. And exportation really didn't happen in any measure until the 16th and 17th century.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to get into more of those characteristics, as I mentioned, it is bright, it is high acid, it is fairly fruity, usually has a distinct light carbonation, and that's in that white wine varietal that we most commonly see. But that bubbliness that you mentioned, which is one of my favorite characteristics, you know, you said, yes, that is it is from when it was originally produced, it was put in the bottle so young that you get that little leftover bit of fermentation. But with modern industrial facilities, we're not really going to rely on chance to get those little bit of bubbles.
Right.
So now it's artificial. They put carbon dioxide into the wine.
Yeah. So it's not that natural, but it's still there. You know, I know you like your bubbles, Prosecco and champagne and sparkling wines.
Well, and I think it's interesting. There is like a specific concentration of bubbles you have to qualify for to be called a sparkling wine.
Mm-hmm.
And Vino Verde, most Vino Verde, again, there are exceptions, there are purposely sparkling Vino Verdes, but most Vino Verde's effervescence doesn't qualify on the bubble scale. There is one of those.
Yeah.
As enough to be called a sparkling wine. So yeah. It is just a wine, but it has an effervescence.
Just a hint of it.
Yeah, it's a very, very tight, very small bubble structure. It just brightens it up a little bit. It's a very snappy, zappy is the word that people apparently use to describe Vino Verde. It's a zappy wine.
Yeah. And probably another reason why you want to drink it as soon as possible, because it's, you lose that. If it's just a light carbonation like that, you lose it when you open the bottle, as far as if it sits around for too long.
For sure. And it's also worth noting, as far as the carbonation goes, it's some of the like nicer brands, actually, and like the smaller producers have actually gotten away from that. They don't want to artificially do it, but they also don't want to like rely on that happening accidentally. So they purposely are making flat wines. Mm-hmm. So if you buy a nice bottle of Vino Verde and it's not bubbly, it might not.
That's on purpose. You didn't get a dud.
Yeah. And you can usually tell like by the shape of the bottle, if it's a like a tall, skinny, fluted bottle, like a Riesling bottle, that's probably going to be effervescent. If it's more of like a rounded bottle, it's going to probably be more of the flat kind. But you know, also if you're hopefully your wine person at your wine store can direct you away if you want the bubbles. And I think you want the bubbles. I always want the bubbles.
I also think it was interesting that they noted what they did to grow the grapevines there, because the farmland was in such demand to grow food on. They didn't want to take up all the farmland growing these vines covering all of it. So they made them go up, and they built tall fences. They'd put them up trees. They'd put them up telephone poles. So they actually would harvest the grapes being on big ladders to go up and be able to harvest them, because they would grow the vines straight up, whatever they could erect to grow them up to make them tall and not take up land laterally.
Apparently that's one of the best like sort of visuals that you can encounter if you're lucky enough to go to the Vino Verde region of Portugal. You will see these tall, like draped over high architecture grapevines. It's just it's not for aesthetics. It's how they grow them, which is cool.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of the grapes, grape-wise, there are many varieties that can be used as Vino Verde. Like between what could be used for white, red, and rosé, there's like over 20 different varietals, which all have unique characteristics. And a lot of Vino Verde will be blended, so it'll be a couple grapes together. But there are two sort of standouts. They're the most common ones you'll encounter, and also the ones that distillers have been, or wineries have been experimenting with single origin. And those are largely the Alvarino and the Lurriero. So those are the two grapes that are most popular, and then very like localized thing you might in Portugal run into a single origin Alvarino. Like it is just that grape. It's Vino Verde, but it is also a single grape. And some of those they even age, like not common at all, like kind of against the style that you expect from Vino Verde. But some of these that are doing the single grape offerings will also do like an aging on them. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
And they have right now like over 19,000 producers, but that's down from over 72,000 producers that they had not too long ago, but they reduced them all down. I guess a lot of them consolidated because of expenses and things like that. Yeah. But that's a lot of people producing grapes.
Well, it's an incredibly, like, it is what you drink in this region. And I mean, I feel like it's funny, when I was doing research for this, there was an article in Vogue just a few months ago about how Vino Verde is going to be on trend this year. And I'm calling it. I'm calling the paper plane, and I'm calling Vino Verde.
They're both going to hit the market. If you got stock, if you're a stock market player, play the stock on those.
Yeah, but apparently it's catching on. It's taken a little while, but it's catching on. And that's, you know, one of the other features that I think people really love about it is the price point. It's that it is a very cheap wine. And, you know, if you stumble across a $6 to $10 bottle of Vino Verde, don't think it's bad. It's not. Like, again, my favorite bottle is $9. And that's pretty on par. Like, you might stumble across a $20 bottle, but most of them are going to be 10-ish, 215-ish, and that's what's to be expected. And now a couple of the reasons for this, one of them is just purely economic. Portugal suffered fairly from the economic downturn in Western Europe, and land and labor are still much cheaper than a lot of the world, so they can produce it at a cheaper price, they can sell it at a cheaper price. But it's also due to the style itself. You don't have to age this wine, you can produce it very quickly. You can use a blend of grapes. It's not just like reliant on one grape. So there are a lot of aspects of this wine, and also like a lot of the grapes that are used in it are just, they're hardier compared to a lot of grapes. I think also there's like a stylistic element of like, they specifically, in one of the articles reading, like that the French, you know, there's a lot of pruning and a lot of like caring for the vines, whereas a lot of these grapes just could grow wherever and they pick them wherever.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, telephone poles, wherever.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just also just like how you do things in one culture versus another. They're like, oh, whatever. Like, we don't need to go. They'll grow. We'll harvest them. Whereas the French are like, we must trim every leaf. I don't know.
Yeah, and plus there's so many producers, so you've got a plentiful supply of grapes. So, you know, in supply and demand, if you've got a whole lot of something, then it's not in as big a demand.
Yeah.
So the price goes down.
Another aspect that I think maybe, at least in the American marketplace, means that you can only sell it for so much, which I hope this opinion, this kind of outlook is changing, because a lot of times we correlate price to alcohol concentration, and Vino Verde is fairly lower in alcohol compared mm-hmm. to a lot of wines. Mm-hmm. So I think that might factor into the price. I don't think it should. I don't think that, you know, it doesn't have to be cheap if it's low alcohol. This is designed to be low alcohol. But that low alcohol part, which is around 8.8 to like 10% compared to most wine being like 15%, 12 to 15%. It's a good bit lower than most wine. That's also caused by that young harvesting. So, you know, it's not fully ripe. It's a little like right on ripeness, maybe even a little underripe. So that means less sugar, which means less sugar gets turned into alcohol. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to be naturally lower in booze, naturally lower in sugar, which I love, because, you know, you can sip on it on a Sunday afternoon and you're not in bed by 8 p.m.
Yeah, if you enjoy wine and you enjoy sipping on wine, then you don't have to worry about the other side effects.
Well, if you like white wine spritzes, because you're like, I like a little bubbles and I also like a little lower alcohol, this is basically, it's a lot of it is made as a white wine spritz almost.
Yeah.
Lower alcohol, it's a little bubbly. It's nice for that, you know?
It's just like a seltzer in a bottle.
Yeah. But yeah, but all of that being said, this is my case for why it is an excellent early spring wine. It literally itself is, it's a spring wine. It's made in the spring of its youth. It's bright, it's acidic, it's easy to drink, it's not too high in alcohol, it's very cheap. So if you're a wine drinker, or you like spritzes, or I don't know, you just like nice, light, fruity things, I think you should give Vino Verde a try.
Absolutely. Even if you're not a wine drinker, that, you know, might be something that you'd like. But I had never heard of it before, and I don't know how common it is, like in restaurants or in markets or anything around here. And like I said, it seemed like what I read, they said that the majority of the product is consumed there in Portugal, that they use it domestically there. So I don't know how much you can find around here.
Well, I guess we just got to go to Portugal and drink all the good stuff. I mean, there's a fair, I'm in New York City, so that's, you know, I can find Vino Verde at most liquor stores, but,
well,
I'm sure it's still genuinely usually that one type of, like, it's a white Vino Verde. It's slightly effervescent. It's made with those two most common grapes. Like, that's usually what I encounter. So
even though we've read through all those different kinds that they have, you might just find one around here, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you got to hold out hope. I mean, I found Nonino.
Well, I did look. There's like a liquor delivery app that it's pretty spotty. Like, so many times I've ordered a single bottle or a couple bottles off of it, and then they just call me and they're like, we don't have any of that. I'm like, oh, well, why is it on your site? But I looked before this episode just to see if like other, like the rosés and the reds are available. And there's like one brand that seems to make a pretty accessible rosé and red that's available in the New York market.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll get those and try them out. I'm curious.
All right. It sounds like a good spring drink.
Yeah, I'm going to try to work it into maybe like a sort of a spritz summer white sangria situation this week.
Add some lemonade. Add some lemonade to it.
Lemonade?
Yeah.
Maybe. It already tastes like lemonade.
Well, there you go. Then you'd fool people. How about some alcoholic lemonade?
What was that movie we talked about where a character was fooled into thinking that a popular cocktail was lemonade?
Oh, yeah.
What was that?
Oh. I forget. We talked about that several episodes back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Anyway. I can't remember what it was, but I do remember that being a thing.
Well.
And we couldn't imagine. How would you think that was lemonade?
No, I know it was a strong cocktail.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. All right. Hopefully this has inspired you wine drinkers out there, to seek out a bottle of Vino Verde. Or, you know, if you're a rich wine drinker, book a trip to northern Portugal and just give us some feedback. Give us some notes and some pictures.
Portugal the country, not Portugal the man.
Yes. It's a music. It's a band. It's a guy.
He's a musician. Yeah, I don't know. I've heard that. I don't know. He had one song out that I heard. I don't know.
Well, in researching Portugal the country, not Portugal the man, there were a lot of other things that we both came across that seemed fun, as far as just, you know, other spirits popular in Portugal, other aspects of their drinking culture. So this is sort of your precursor. There's all about Vino Verde. But for next week, I think we should just come back and hit, like, more of the broader sense of Portuguese drinking. So if this was interesting to you, you should come back next week, because we'll have more about how to drink in Portugal and what.
Yeah, especially if you're planning a trip there, then you'll know, you'll be on trend when you show up.
Yeah, give you all that. You don't need to read that Vogue article. You gotta pay money for that. You're right here for free.
Yeah, that's right. We'll give you all that information, and we don't even care if you pay us. If you want to, fine. Yeah. If you don't, that's fine.
No, just send me a picture of you in the rolling hills of northern Portugal drinking a beautiful glass of Vino Verde. That's all I ask.
And no photoshopping.
No, I'll hang it on my vision board. All right. Well, hey, thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. It's always an adventure. I never know what country we're going to next.
Yeah, this was a surprise to me, too.
It's a travel in my mind.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, at least, well, I was going to say, like, the borders are open, but that doesn't necessarily mean there's still, I don't know, a new COVID variant every week. I can't keep up with it. So travel is still a little intimidating to some of us. So the only kind of travel we can do is in our minds.
That's right.
Thank you all for joining us. If you want to find us on the internet, we are NeatBoozeCast on Instagram. We are NeatTheBoozeCast@gmail.com. You can email us your questions, your comments, if you have any episode ideas. And if you want to talk about your feelings on Vino Verde or Portugal or whatever, you can do that.
NeatTheBoozeCast group page on Facebook.
Go there and do that.
We're there 24/7.
24/7.
Well, Facebook's there. I don't know about me.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's a. It's not a Facebook page that never sleeps situation. It's pretty tame. All right. Well, hey, thanks again. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
me. I gotta figure out what song that was now. There was a good song that was out, and that's who it was by, Portugal the Man. And I don't know.
You can Google that. That's a Googleable thing.
He's Googleable?
Googleable.
That sounds bad.